You know, we live in a world that essentially is governed by a mentality of disposal. You know, we have disposable diapers. You know, there was a day when you had to wash them and, you know, care for them and make sure that they didn't have the wrong kind of bleach in them and all that kind of stuff. And I know that that's foreign to most of you, but there were those days, I want you to know. And you may have even been the object of that. I don't know if your parents did that at the time you were in that stage of life. But, you know, nowadays, disposable diapers, and we just, you know, toss. We have disposable, you know, plates and cups. We essentially, basically, even think of most of the things of the products of our country as disposable. I was sharing recently with my assistant, Lisa, that I remember a couple years ago when one of our daughter's marriage was going to include the activity of a little, you know, wagon that was going to pull a couple of the nephews down the aisle. And so this wagon was one that we had ordered and put together. And when we got it in the mail, we ordered it. I was putting it together. And I discovered that one piece on this, it happened to be sort of a axle rod on the front of this that was bent a little bit. So I felt like it was a new product. I should have at least an item that was not damaged. So I called the company that had sent it to us. And I was basically just asking for that piece to be sent to me. You understand, just a rod about this long. And as I explained to them what had happened, they said, oh, don't worry about it, we'll just send you a whole new wagon. And they basically were saying, just dispose of the one we sent you, and we'll just send you another one. Now, I'm not sure, I'm confident that the thought of that was that it was more expensive for them to have it shipped back, pay for the shipping, discard it, send me another, and so they basically disposed of one, and as I said to my assistant, I ended up just straightening it out myself on a vise, and so now we have two wagons for the price of one. It was a pretty good deal, you know. Didn't dispose of it at all. But you know, we live in that kind of world as far as just our mentality. We don't wear out clothes. We, you know, a new fad comes on, so we throw away, and on it goes. And it's such that it's easy for us to become that, you know, same discard mentality and disposal mentality when it comes to life. Our world is fast approaching the sense in which we basically discard the past. And we don't want to have anything to do with it. We just live for the moment and shouldn't worry and in that sense of the word, or shouldn't have a continuum of the past. And we even have, you know, generational differences that we describe. And please know that I'm not in any way blaming you as younger people or blaming myself as a younger person to my predecessors. But I do believe it's important for us to stop and ponder that God's intent was to not discard the past or to dispose of the past. Doesn't mean that we just keep doing it the same way all the time. I'm not here to try and say don't ever change. That's not the issue. But how do we approach the importance of history? I sometimes remember this as I think of history, and I know you understand I have a little bit of a bent of interest in history just because of some of my own personal, you know, habits and training. But the Bible is a book of history. You stop to ponder, it's a collection of the past. And so for us to have an idea that we just basically discard or dispose of the past is really, in essence, saying throw away the Bible and get something different. And there are those who have done that. They've wanted to add and supplement and basically say the Bible is no longer relevant and no longer pertinent and applicable. And I know you don't hold that view, but it's easy for us as God's children to maybe carelessly treat the past. I want to just share with you, from a biblical perspective, the appropriate approach we should have to memories and the making of memories and the building of memories. You know, memories are ultimately the recounting and the rehearsal of things that have happened in the past. And so to that degree, there is tremendous reference in the Bible regularly to how we go about building memories. And please know that my intent is to not try and speak ill of the present or to exalt the past. I think it's possible for us to inappropriately review the past as though it was so, you know, the good old days were not the good old days, as the expression is. But I will say this unashamedly. It's impossible to live effectively in the present or prepare effectively for the future without adequately knowing the past. And the Bible gives that as a regular reference to us. And one of the classic passages is Exodus chapter 12, if you'd turn there, please. Exodus chapter 12. Here's an occasion in which an event, and there are lots of these in the Bible, but I've chosen just to select this one, an event in Scripture where something was instituted in Israel called the Passover, and that particular occasion was not just a one-time event. It's now supposed to be an ongoing, forever observed, never to be forgotten. It was a memory that they were to establish. Were they again going to be released from Egypt? No, that was a one-time event. But the occasion of its impact was to be so important to Israel that forever, from that point on, they were to observe it. And they were to teach their children. And they were to instruct them. And so that the significance of the past, as it continued to affect the present and as it went into the future, is the illustration that we have in this wonderful passage. Exodus chapter 12, I'm going to read verse 14 and then skip down to verse 21 and read through verse 28. So if you'll follow as I read these verses, Exodus 12, verse 14, and then we'll skip to verse 21 and read through verse 28 as we think about this building of memories thought. And we're going to see four ways to build those memories in a moment. But let's read first, if you would, follow along, Exodus 12, 14. And this day, referring to the Passover, and this day shall be unto you for a memorial, literally for a memory. And ye shall keep it a feast to the Lord throughout your generations. Ye shall keep it a feast by an ordinance forever. Now verse 21. Then Moses called for all the elders of Israel and said unto them, draw out and take you a lamb according to your families and kill the Passover. And ye shall take a bunch of hyssop and dip it in the blood that is in the basin, strike the lintel and the two side posts with the blood that is in the basin, and none of you shall go out at the door of this house until the morning. For the Lord will pass through to smite the Egyptians. When he seeth the blood upon the lintel and on the two side posts, the Lord will pass over the door and will not permit the destroyer to come into your houses to smite you. And ye shall observe this thing for an ordinance to thee and to thy sons forever. And it shall come to pass, when ye be come to the land which the Lord will give you, according as he promised, that ye shall keep this service. And it shall come to pass, when your children shall say unto you, what mean ye by this service? That ye shall say, it is the sacrifice of the Lord's Passover, who passed over the houses of the children of Israel in Egypt, when he smote the Egyptians and delivered our houses. And the people bowed the head and worshipped. And the children of Israel went away and did as the Lord had commanded Moses and Aaron, so did they. From verses 24 through 28 now, I want to focus our thoughts and just ask you to follow as we trace four ways that we should build memories, as seen from this passage. Principles. We're not going to do this same thing. We don't observe the Passover. That's not what this is about. But there are principles that we can learn as to how we should institute and regularly have observances of memories, those things that are significantly important, that should never be forgotten, that cause us to continue to live appropriately for God. And so this particular thought in building memories, the first way I bring to your attention is just the thought of the making of a memory. What kind of memory should we make? Now, truthfully, there are lots of things that happen that we remember, but we don't really make them significant points in our lives. And so as we look at verse 24, I just want you to see that there are a couple of thoughts about making memories, first off, in this building process, this first way. The making of a memory begins, first of all, with the practicing of spiritual habits. That's seen in verse 24, the practice of spiritual habits. Ye shall observe this thing for an ordinance to thee. A regularly practiced spiritual habit in Israel, from that day on, was the annual observance of the Passover service. I believe it's important for us, and the kind of memories that we ought to be establishing should be largely rooted in spiritual routines and habits that we have. I remember 1995, about this time of year. It was just 1995, last week would have been the 14th year. My father passed away unexpectedly, and we were actually on corral tour when we got the word of his having been struck with a brain aneurysm, and he went into a coma. Mrs. A was leading the corral and music at that time, and so we were actually in Knoxville, Tennessee, When I got the call from my oldest sister saying that my father had gone into the hospital unexpectedly on his way home from a church visitation ministry that he'd had, and had had this circumstance that had put him into a coma. Of course, we were immediately responsive to say, should we leave tour and come immediately? And the circumstances were such that my mom and my sister said, no, there's really nothing you can do. And so we continued to finish the tour, got back, and I'll never forget, we had the chorale chapel like last Wednesday. And then we left immediately by plane to go to Iowa, my wife and I, to be with my father in Omaha, Nebraska, where he was in the hospital. And en route, I'll never forget, as we landed in Chicago, made transfer flights, I was supposed to call my uncle just to make sure things were without any complication further. And as I called my uncle, he said, your father just passed away. And so if you want to just go back home, it's fine. We understand, because you'll certainly come out to the funeral. And my wife and I determined, no, we had committed to going out. My goal was to try and be of ministry to my mother and to help in that particular time. And so we went ahead and took the flight and came back shortly, then turned right around with our family and drove out to the funeral service in Red Oak, Iowa. I share all that to give this backdrop. As we're driving this marathon run with our five children at that point, en route, my wife and I were reflecting with our children that this really was the first close family member that had died in our family. Both of our parents were living at that time, uncles and aunts, etc. And so this was a new stage in our family. And so as we traveled, we said, you know, we ought to really find this being a moment of a beginning of something in our family that from this point on we should be reminded of. Not necessarily just dad's death, but what do we do when a loved one dies in our family? And so as we talked as a family, I remember very vividly, we determined that what we would do is when we got to the occasion of the funeral home where my father would have been lying in just honor of that wake and visitation time before funeral service, we determined that we would find a time when just our immediate family, our five children and my wife and I, could gather around that casket and reflect with great appreciation upon my father's life, and then together quote Psalm 23 by memory, just as a testimony of what this occasion was reminding us about. And then we determined after that, that as we concluded the service time and as the burial would take place before we left town to return back, the trip back to West Virginia, we would stop at the graveside one more time, obviously the casket now in place and the you know, completion of the closing of the grave, and just alone again, circle around that grave, and the seven of us holding hands, we would stand there and we would quote John 14, 1 through 6, as a tribute to what we claimed in the loss of Grandpa, Dad. Now, that was the beginning, and we didn't know what the future held, but then, as the Lord would have it, a couple years later, my father-in-law passed away. And I remember very vividly, as we were repeating somewhat the same journey, my children saying, Dad, don't forget that when we get to Grandpa Welker's casket, we need to find a time when we can just gather and quote Psalm 23 together and arrange a time to stop at the graveside at the end and quote John 14, 1 through 6 together. It was a blessing to me to have my children remember that occasion. Even though I believe I would have done it in the sense of the fact that was our intent. And now as my mother, just a year ago, last week, went home to be with the Lord, and we were there. And on this occasion, all of us were there but Leah. Leah was expecting our grandson, her first child, and that baby was born the 26th of March, so obviously she was not at a point she could travel from Virginia Beach to the funeral service for my mother. But you know what we did? As we hovered around that grave or that casket of my mom, we called Leah, and by voice phone, she participated in the quoting of that. She wasn't there in presence, but was there as a part of that. And as we went to the graveside, called Leah and included her in that process. my point is this. I believe it's important for us to establish the practices of spiritual habits that are worthy of memory. And this was not just a capricious assignment or some type of a torturous requirement. God said, this is a meaningful, significant moment in your history, and don't ever forget it. And can I tell you, in your life personally, in the history of Appalachian Bible College, I don't ever want us to forget spiritual moments of dynamic impact. And so, the making of a memory starts with the practices of spiritual habits. Do you have practiced spiritual habits? I can tell you lots more, and I don't mean to draw attention, but things that we do in our family that matter, that are important, that are regular, because we don't want to forget God. Making of memory starts with practicing spiritual things. But then further, it's the perpetuation of spiritual things. Secondly, look at verse 24. It says, you shall observe this thing, that's the practice of spiritual things, to thy sons forever. I believe it's wonderful to have things that you say we are always going to do at our house. In fact, you know, in the Old Testament, the primary perpetuation of spirituality was not passing a family Bible onto somebody else. They didn't have one. What they did was they groomed the eldest son of the family to be the perpetuator of the teaching to the next generation. And that's why they would by oral tradition. And that's why Joshua, still in his old age, this famous verse that we all love to quote, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Do you know that Joshua was an old man with all kinds of adult kids and family members around him? And he still says, this is what we do at our house. And can I tell you, as a college, by the grace of God, I want us to always have the perpetuation of certain spiritual habits. Chapel is critical. It's required. Prayer day is important. It's a necessary part of our... Those are spiritual moments that we dare not forget. And there's many a college, from the very inception of the very first one. You don't know that Harvard College, or Harvard University as it's known, was established in 1636 for the purpose of training men for the ministry. And what a travesty to its heritage today. Because they forgot what they were about. And you can go to Harvard today and you can see even wonderful engraved spiritual references on significant points. Arches that have scripture verses, etched in them. And they're nothing more than a travesty to their heritage. Can I tell you, we dare not forget the making of memories. Practice spiritual habits that you perpetuate forever. But there's a second way we make and build these memories. Not only the making of memories, but if you will please, it's then the marking of those memories. In verse 25, we see the marking as it takes place. And it shall come to pass. That's just a fancy way of saying throughout time. It shall come to pass when ye become to the land which the Lord will give you. First off, if you will, marking memories must have heavenly marks on them. We ought to regularly have moments where we can say, God did this, God did this, God did this. There ought to be heavenly markings to our memories. One of the greatest joys of having some kind of a testimony that you keep track of. I'm so thankful for the beginning of a practice years ago of a prayer journal in which I can go back and I can review answers to prayer that remind me when I'm going through tough times now, hey, God's answered before, He'll do it again. That's why God regularly had them set up these altars wherever they went, so they could pass by there and they'd see this monument that was there, and they'd say, oh yeah, I remember when God did this, He did it before, He can do it again. And so heavenly markings ought to be a part of our building of memories, but not only heavenly markings, we see also human markings that are there. Verse 25 says, ye shall keep this service. It's our responsibility. God has given us things to note, but then it's our responsibility on the human level to mark those moments as well. It's the stewardship of our generation to guide the next generation, to guide the next generation in the perpetuation of God's truth. And so the markings of those memories. I move to the third of these ways as we just move along through this passage, and I'd like to share some time on the meaning of those memories now. As you build memories, you certainly make them, and then you mark them, but now there must be meaning to them. And we see that in verse 26 and 27. I want you to note, first of all, there are memories that have no meaning. And you say, where do you get that? Well, look at verse 26. It shall come to pass when your children shall say unto you, what mean ye by this service? You know what that's really saying? Up to this point, they've been doing this just sort of methodically. Here's my point. It is not wrong to make a person do something that they don't understand what they're doing. See, I think it's good to make your children go to church. I think it's good for them to learn to read the Bible. I think it's good for them to learn, certain habits. I think it's good for us to have maybe you as students do things you don't fully understand at times. Here's what happens. As they do that over time, then their curiosity and their interest at the appropriate level of ability to understand comes to light. I remember when my family would, observe the communion service. As I was a child growing up, my father would explain. But, I remember the day that my father sat down and really explained to me what communion was about. When I said, Dad, what's communion all about? I'd observed lots of communions. Now, I hadn't participated in it because my parents didn't let me participate until I really did understand it. But I'd observed it. There's nothing wrong with making persons do something they don't understand if it's a good thing to do. I think that's usually childhood illustrations, or it might be spiritual levels of understanding. Some things, persons don't have the maturity to understand the significance of why we don't go here, or why we don't do this, or why we don't associate with this. I think that's maturation steps that we have to come to fully comprehend. And so there are meanings without, or there are memories without meanings. That's what happened here. They were just doing it, and their kids just did it. And then all of a sudden, one day, the kid said, Dad, by the way, why do we do this? And that leads us to our second thought of the meanings of memories. Not only meanings or memories without meanings, but now we have memories with meanings. And verse 27 gives us just some examples. I think it's a wonderful illustration of the kinds of things we should regularly be reminding people about. This happens to have all collection, every one of them, but I don't think every memory has all these details. But for starters, for example, says that ye shall say, it is the sacrifice. I want to pause right there and say, memory should include this meaning. And that is this, deprivation. There's nothing wrong with a memory that says, I remember when we didn't have. And it's good to have those reminders. Those are good things. And by the way, that's part of the dilemmas of our culture today, because we don't have people who are willing to live with the sacrifice stage of life. They want it instantly, and that's why we've got all this overspending and all the complications. And may I just say to you as a word of wisdom, may I just remind you, as you develop in your homes, you're not going to instantly have everything that your parents had. And that's good, because you need your own set of stories to tell your children about how you didn't have it. It's the old adage, uphill both ways to school when I was a kid, And some of those memories get a little exaggerated, but the truth is, deprivation is a good part of a meaning for memory. I remember when we didn't have this building. And guess what? We still had chapel. You that are in my American church history class, remember the other day when the power went out in the middle of class and PowerPoint went down and some of you looked like, okay, class dismissed. And I said, I've taught more classes without PowerPoint than with. You're just going to learn how to do it without it. Yeah, see? It's wonderful. Deprivation. That's a part of the meaning of memories. Not only deprivation, it was a sacrifice, but secondly, derivation. It's a sacrifice of the Lord's Passover. I think our memories should regularly talk about God and how we derive what we are because of His blessing. And so the derivation of a memory, where did it come from? Furthermore, not only the deprivation and the derivation, but we see a memory should have description that goes with it. Here it describes what they did. When God passed over and explains the little incident of the Passover very succinctly. He smote the Egyptians, didn't smite us, da da da. I think it's wonderful to explain. I know sometimes you get a little bit weary maybe with your parents and they tell this long old story and you've already heard it 20 times as they tell it to somebody else. And I do think that, sometimes that can get a little old. But I do believe we ought to talk about just the description of a memory. That's a way to get meaning. But here's another one, and these last two are ones that really blessed my heart as I prepared this message. Verse 27 goes on to say, after it describes the Passover, it says, and delivered our houses. Can I tell you, memories ought to have deliverance moments. When you say, God got me out of this. I remember when God helped me through this. And those are great memories that you ought to just regularly champion for God. Deliverance memories. That's a meaning that you can share. And then the last one is, I think, the sense of defeat that goes with it. It says he defeated the Egyptians. Can I tell you, there ought to be great memories where you can talk about how God defeated the enemy that was seeking to get you. Those are just some examples of meanings to memories. I'm sure there are others, but in that sense of what memories mean, can I tell you, it ought to be a part of our building process. We make memories, we mark them, we know meanings from them, but number four, there ought to be ministry from memories. Ministry. We see it so powerfully in the end of verse 27 and into verse 28. After this little exercise of exhortation to the people, this is now a meaningful, memorable moment that is never to be forgotten, always perpetuated. And it says, verse 27, the people bowed the head and worshiped, and the children of Israel went away and did as the Lord had commanded. I want you to see three ministry illustrations here very quickly. First is, memories ought to humble us. They bowed their heads. I do think that sometimes we can get memory oriented to the point that we use them as boasting moments. You know, successes that we've accomplished or great times. And we sort of champion. And I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but I've been in some people's settings whose talk of memories in the past make me sort of feel like, well, boy, I could never have what they've got because, you know, you can't go back and do that again. And to a degree, that's right. But I don't think I should ever share those moments of memory with sort of this superiority attitude. We should always be humbled at the grace of God. Appalachian Bible College is blessed with so many wonderful moments that I can tell you, we must bow our heads in humble gratitude to God. Secondly, ministry not only humbled, but ministry that is, if you will, honoring. They worshiped. The word worship, you know, is built upon the word worth-ship. And the only memory that really has worth, ultimately, is one that exalts God or gives opportunity for God to be exalted. And when they had this assignment, they were humbled in the presence of God and they honored Him as they worshiped Him for what He had accomplished for them. But there's a third and final evidence of this ministry of memories, and that is they heeded God. Verse 28 says, they went out and they did it. You know, it's possible to know something from the past because truthfully, you know my little one-liner, learn from others' mistakes, you don't live long enough to make them all yourself. You know, you learn from the past, and truthfully, we're accountable because of the past. That's why some people who live back here aren't going to be judged as severely as we will be judged, because they didn't have the lesson of the past to learn as we do. And so as you know, then the truth is, we must do. Heed what God has said. This morning, we've reflected upon this wonderful privilege of building memories and have just sporadically woven in Appalachian Bible College's heritage. Can I just say, the greatest of all memories that we should never forget is really tied to even this memory moment in Exodus, and that is the memory of the work of Christ in our behalf on Calvary. I want you to do this as we close today. I'd like you to take out your hymn book and very quietly but meaningfully open to 310, please, would you? This is a hymn that we don't sing a lot, frankly. And I'm not rebuking you, but I am just asking you, frankly, some of you may not even know it. But the words of this are so meaningfully in keeping with this importance of building memories and as it relates to our privilege of salvation and the work of Christ on Calvary. You see, the cross is a memory. Jesus isn't crucified again. And we are remembering. In fact, he said as he went back to heaven, this do in what? Remembrance of me. The words of this song capture it so effectively, particularly in the chorus, lest I forget, lest I forget, lest I forget. Could I invite you to just use this as a reminder to make sure you keep the memory of your salvation well in place and the memory of the work of God well in place, and then rejoice in the memory of Appalachian Bible College's heritage that makes that possible.